Good morning. It's the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Glad to be here with you this morning.
We made it.
I was a little worried because I got a weather report yesterday after I went for a beautiful sunny day run. It was stunning yesterday. It was beautiful. It was 0 degrees. I went for a nice daytime jog. And then I got a report on my phone that said, freezing rain warning, possible threat to life or property.
That scared me. I'm not going to lie to you.
That's scary. So I immediately sheltered in place.
I almost sent the text in saying, maybe we should do it from home. It's going to be, what if there's deathly capabilities?
Scary. But I think that our loyal listeners from across Ontario can fill us in. Maybe that wasn't a GTA, but it came to my phone and I live in the GTA.
I feel like they got to localize those things a little bit more. Doesn't it seem like it's like, okay, there's like a little blurb with how many different towns it may affect,
Mine
all
didn't
the hamlets.
Say the towns.
And it's like a full ass paragraph.
Really?
Like
I don't have that.
Well, I guess I went to a different. I actually, you made me Google it.
Yeah, I scared you.
And
right?
I believe it was Weather Network. And it was like a list of like, you know, every single small town in
all
Ontario
that
may or may not be affected, everywhere that you know, all the places you have been.
Oh, well, you could have let me know.
And I thought, well, there's no way it's affecting everybody, is it?
I don't know. How's our buddies in Norfolk County this morning?
Norfolk County.
Gray County, how you doing?
Definitely affected.
It was Prince Edward County, how are we? It was Niagara region, let me know.
It was ultimately too warm, I think, for it to be a big deal. It could cool off before we get back in our cars and drive home, but I think we'll be all right.
You have an issue with your drive-in as well. You wanted to raise awareness to a problem.
Well, I don't understand, like technology these days, advancements and everything we do in life, everything's easier, right? Like, we got the self-driving cars going on.
I don't really like that.
I don't either.
I don't want to get into it this morning.
We got all these opportunities, right? Like, everything is better. And yet, I still can't see the lines on the road. Like, what? When it's, like, a little wet, all of a sudden, they all disappear?
Like, on the highway, like 401, we're talking.
Yeah. Like, I'm just guessing. I'm completely guessing.
That's dangerous.
Have you've never noticed that, or is it just a me problem?
I drive on the streets of Toronto.
The streets of Toronto are bad, too.
My major problem is not getting a tire blown up on Adelaide, with the largest sinkhole known to man. I'm more concerned about that. I don't care. I don't even see the lines. I'm just like,
well, you're bombing through three lanes because no one else is even involved at that point in the day.
So they're not reflective anymore?
I just don't see them. They don't reflect like they should.
If it's
if the road
water?
Is at all wet, huh. I can't see them. It might be a me problem.
There's probably an individual that paints the lines on the road that's listening. And maybe the quality of paint has diminished throughout the pandemic.
We need something you can see when it's, you know, not completely bone dry.
Do you think it has to do with your lights? Are they like clouded glass?
No way.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think you need your eyes checked? You have really bad vision, don't you?
Thank you, Ailish.
Like minus five?
But I have corrected vision.
But isn't it minus five?
I believe it's 5.5.
Oh my God, Justin. You're legally blind.
I don't know if 5.5 is legally blind. When I first started driving and my eyesight was like diminishing rapidly. One day I was like, I don't need glasses. I could drive home without glasses. So I took my glasses off and I'm like trying to drive home legally blind, as you pointed out.
I just looked it up.
And I'm like, well, why would I ever do that? Like, I was like too proud to be too proud to really, really, truly need corrective lenses.
Simply put, if your prescription is -2.5 or lower, this means you are legally blind.
I'm legally blind then.
Wow, Justin. That's no wonder you can't see the lines.
But I wear contact. Like, I can see you perfectly. I know what 20/20 vision looks like because I create 20/20 vision for myself through corrective lens.
I don't know. I'm a little worried about you.
I can't be the only one that can't see the lines.
Well, the text line has now brought out their phones and they're fired up about the line. 100% agree with Justin's sentiment. Coming down the 400, I can barely see anything.
Lines, what are we doing?
Lines are non-existent. They need the concave little reflectors on the road like they do on every road in the United States. Couldn't agree more. I've ripped around the Vermont mountains post midnight and you can see everything except for moose.
That's you or that's the text?
Me.
Okay, so then why don't you agree with me?
Because I haven't driven at night on the 400 in quite a while, but I can agree with you.
It's bad in Toronto, too. It's bad downtown as well.
Rich from Burlington. Yep, headed north on the 427 from QEW. It's like Kramer painted over them lines.
The worst is 427 to QEW when you make that, when you're going, I guess, is west from southwest. So you're going southwest.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden it all changes because there's construction and you cannot see any change in the lines. It's just like everyone's converging.
That's
in
freaky.
At high speed. It's like, I don't know. How is it possible that our roads are as bad as they
are? This is part of our responsibilities to bring awareness to these things.
Because the best highway in Ontario is privately owned, unfortunately.
That's true. Sean in Etobicoke, it's impossible to see the lines. Kawartha Lakes, Mike, just starting freezing rain now, okay? It's in Kawartha. And finally, morning, it's David in Niagara. It's raining. 1 degree, little slippery on the QW. Be safe.
Yeah, be safe out there and try to see the lines if you can, even if you're legally blind.
What if you put your brights on? I mean, that's dangerous, but you'd see the lines.
Well, that's not what you're supposed to do. I don't even think that's the issue. Because it's everywhere. Like, it's even to the side, I wouldn't be able to see them. And the brights would only go right in front of
me. Okay, last one here. Christine in Brampton. It's not just you, Justin.
Thank you.
Morning, Eilish. XOXO. Justin's clutch on this one.
XOXO.
I got some friends in the text line. I'm currently guessing where the lanes exist. Okay, everybody, dial it in. Use Siri to text us.
Don't text while you're trying to figure out where the lines are.
But okay, we've really circled an issue here.
It's definitely an issue. We just have the worst roads in, you know, the entire world, I think.
All right. Somehow. Well, speaking of issues, the Raptors win. In overtime against the Knicks, it was a fun game. It was a 3 p.m. start, a little afternoon delight. It was nice to watch sports with the daylight, you know, stagger your viewing.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really good win for your Toronto Raptors. But do you want them to be winning games? This is an internal debate. I thought.
Is it? Like, were you actively having this debate? Are you having this debate? Are you cheering against the Toronto Raptors at this point?
No, but I think that there's probably a lot of individuals out there like myself that watch a game like this and think, well, that was a really great showing. Like, there's a lot of positivity. The game was great to watch. Some players are really stepping up here. But the big picture is, like, why do we want to be beating 50% of the teams we play and not progressing either higher up the standings because we lose half of them, mm-hmm. or going lower in the standings to work on getting a better opportunity in the draft?
Right.
Like, And I think it was really great to watch that game. I was very happy with it. I had an enjoyable experience. But then you think big picture, and, you know, this is also something that I listen to post-game Raptor show every day. Will Liu brings up a good point with Alex yesterday as well. Is like, well, I don't know. It's like you have two minds, you know. You have future you watching the Raptors, where the development is going. And you have current you watching the Raptors thinking like, well, we're still in this mid rankings, middle of the season, winning 50% of the games, beating bad teams, beating a good team. Like, I don't know. I just think it's worth raising the question is like when you're watching these games, are you in this middle ground where you love to watch your team succeed and it's a good, fun game and you're seeing Scotty Barnes continue to step up and look like, you know, what he looked like last year. But then big picture, you think, well, where are we? What are we doing?
Well, I think you're always asking yourself that question, but I'm not at the point yet where I'm actively rooting against the Raptors because I feel like they have to make that decision first, right?
Yes.
Like at this point.
But is this not clouding their decision
thing,
at times?
Yeah. If it clouds the decision, then that's the issue. But that's management's mistakes. You shouldn't have to see losses at this point. Like you shouldn't have to be actively tanking your players, not playing hard for you to make the decision. You being Masai Ujiri or Bobby Webster should be able to see that this team isn't good enough. That was full measures. That's as good as it's going to get, I think, for the Raptors, honestly.
Definitely. Like,
that was a really, really good game. And they didn't rely on their bench at all because they can't. And they got everything out of their starters. Great Fred game, great Scotty game. That's about as good as you can get. That's about your ceiling if you're the Raptors. And it was an overtime victory over the New York Knicks. And the Knicks are good. They're fine. They're not a great team. Not even the slightest. So that's where you're at. That's where your peak is. That's where your ceiling is. I think it's important to identify that. But I don't think you can actively cheer against them yet because the values of these players in the trade market is the most important thing. Like, I don't want to see Fred continue to crater. You want to see him perform well. You want to see him play his way out of Toronto if, in fact, that's what you deem is necessary. You want to see Gary Trent Jr. hit shots and make himself a valuable asset before the trade deadline. So over the next month, I think you're definitely cheering for the success of the team, or at least individual success from the players. Certainly Scotty Barnes is, mm-hmm. you want him to be performing well all the time, because he is the future. His development is very, very important. His happiness is important in a lot of ways. But until they decide where they're going, disband at least a little bit, I don't think I'm cheering against them yet.
It's funny, because last week you were full on scorched earth, burned it down.
Well, I want them to realize what they should do. I'm full trade Fred, trade Gary Trent Jr., consider the other options. And once they do that, yeah, lose games. That's fine. That's great. But right now it's about maximizing value. Right now it's about keeping up, propping up an asset. And if you're a Raptors fan, you want to see Gary Trent Jr. and Fred VanVleet in particular playing well. But the most important thing is identifying what the issue is, because more and more evidence, even after we got off the air yesterday, that there are issues.
Yeah, we'll get into that. A lot of trending conversation around a specific current NBA player, mm-hmm. mentioning that things might not be great in Toronto. But you mentioned Scotty Barnes has been a really bright part of the stretch, which hasn't always been wins, 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 but he's now got 20 or more points in four out of his last five games. He's assisted on 30% of the Raptors' points in the last three contests. He's been up and down the court on both ends of the ball, an impact player. I think it's really elevated the play on other starters on this team. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to circle that's positive. I just think it's interesting, and I don't think I'm alone in this. I think 590, let me know. Like, are you able to separate these two parts of you that want a successful plan and a future, but also want to watch fun, enjoyable games like you did last night or yesterday afternoon?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a fair question. I think what makes it enjoyable then?
Like that was, you know what makes
that,
it enjoyable?
That was an entertaining basketball game. Like that was a fun basketball game. If you could remove the context of the season, you're like, wow, that was like after you're like, wow, that was fun. That was awesome.
You know what made it fun for me was because the last week, Nick Nurse has looked pissed in the media. He doesn't want to answer questions about energy. He's actively said that this team doesn't have the right juju right now, the vibes. And they went out there and had a hard fought game with energy, with consistency. And they looked like they were playing for each other, which has been a big question with this mm-hmm. team. Like, what's the dynamic? Has Nick lost the room? Do the players even want to be here? And that was a great representation of a team that was fighting for each other, maybe fighting for their own value, as you mentioned.
Maybe that's the big thing. I mean, MSG is MSG, right? Oh. There are more eyes on you if you're playing at MSG. Mm-hmm. It may be no coincidence that two of the best games this season the Raptors have played have been at MSG, with two wins over the New York Knicks, one being Pascal Siakam's 50-piece, and this one being a pretty across the board, at least in the starting five, really strong game. Fred has played well against the Knicks. Fred has really struggled against other teams. I wonder if this was, you know, partly showcased. But like, I feel like when this team loses itself in the moment, loses itself in a basketball game, doesn't have a reason to be like looking over their shoulder or pointing fingers or whatever it is, whatever is plaguing them, if they can put that behind them and just get lost in a basketball game, that starting five, you squint, they can look really, really good. And they outpaced and outmatched a team that's going to the playoffs, going to be involved. And that's what you can get from that starting five. And you tax them and you play them all 45 minutes mm-hmm. or whatever that you need to do. But when you have that five and they can lose themselves in a moment and actually trust each other and play basketball, they can be very good. However, that's just too much to ask for every night. Like, you need bench. You need the wiggle room to have one guy having an off night. And if one piece seems to fall out of place, the Raptors completely unravel.
And they got a big opportunity tonight on a back-to-back against the Bucks on Sportsnet 590 Van. That is, the Bucks have been struggling.
And I can see your perspective here. Okay, play really well but lose, that's not the worst thing in the world against a team like the Bucks. Because if they beat the Bucks, play really well and beat the Bucks, two wins in a row against playoff teams, and then you might be tricking yourself into something.
That's just a tough, like, it's
the
a
worst
conundrum.
Is tricking yourself.
The worst is being in the middle.
Yeah.
That's it.
They have time to remove themselves from the middle, though. Like, they're not going to be the worst team in the league. They're just too good. There's too much pride. There's too much talent on the team to prevent that. Even if they do sell off a lot of assets. They get really aggressive at the deadline. They act as the domino that's going to set the market, all that stuff. Still probably going to have Pascal Siakam. Still going to have Scottie Barnes. They're still going to have pieces that are going to win games and be better than teams like the Charlotte Hornets, who are going to put themselves in position to get Wemby. But they're not going to lose. They can't just tank and get to the bottom.
I agree with that. I don't think that they're in a position to tank and get to the bottom. And I don't think that's part of their core values as well. I think it would be a really tough decision, not only for the players to buy into that, but for management, because that's a big step backwards in terms of what your next 3 years is going to be like. And you're just a couple seasons removed from winning the championship. I just think there's a lot of conflicting feelings, not from fans, not from us, I have to talk about it, but from coach, management, and players. But if they play like that and they play with some heart and they look like a team, there's positives from it. But the big picture is, where does that leave you? They got 5 games in the next 7 days. We're going to see quite a few opportunities to, you know, string this together.
That's a tough schedule for a team relying pretty much entirely on their 5 starters to carry them through games.
Last night, Pascal, Freddie, Barnes, Gary Trent, and OG all played over 40 minutes. Last week, I mentioned this quite a few times, the bench was so good that no one played over 40 minutes in 3 consecutive games. Now we're back to players playing over 40 minutes.
That's the only way to win. When they went
3-0 when all the...
Well, they were playing Charlotte.
Still.
So that's the difference. Like, you can rely on the Achuas and Bouchers of the world to get you through Charlotte games, and that's why they're not going to be able to outmatch Charlotte to the bottom, even if they tear apart. Mm-hmm. But against a team like New York, which is a legitimate playoff contender, not contender, but a playoff team, a team that is on the plus side of things, at least in the Eastern Conference, you need to get a victory to exhaust your 5 best players. That's what's really plaguing the Raptors. Like, they're just not, the depth isn't there. The trust doesn't seem to be there. Yeah, there are a lot of issues, but when it boils down to it, to compete every night, night in and night out in the NBA, you need more than your starting 5. You need consistency. You need depth. You need a lot more than what they have, and that's why they're in the situation that they're in.
Here's a text that should lead into our next topic, which we teased.
And really, it's the most important thing.
It is. Mike and Welland, lifelong Raptors fan, love the 10-year run we've enjoyed. I always cheer to win and just trust management to do what they do. Now, to do what they do might be something that we've seen a little bit of insight. In the most recent episode of CJ McCollum's self-titled podcast, he's in New Orleans Pelicans guard. Keep that in mind. He also serves as the president of the Players Association. He weighed in on the Raptors' struggles.
He's a former Portland Trailblazer. Mm-hmm.
He weighed in on the Raptors' struggles. Just, I don't know if it was prompted. I haven't heard the entire podcast, but he straight up comes out and says the following.
Something's going to happen. I don't know what. There's rumblings about certain players on the team not being happy and due to tampering. I can't speak to that, but right. I think they're going to move someone at some point. I don't know what type of picks they have lined up, but something needs to change because they're way too talented to be struggling the way they've been struggling throughout the season. They got too many good pieces. They got too many guys who are not only impactful and quality NBA players on that team, but that would be impactful and quality players on other teams and probably have larger roles depending on who they decided to move.
Just worth noting that he was obviously, as you mentioned, previous teammates with Gary Trent Jr. So probably knows him quite well. Not that that's the subject of his conversation, but he has been the subject of trade speculation for quite a while.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that Gary Trent Jr. is the one that's unhappy. It doesn't even necessarily mean that Gary Trent Jr. is the quote unquote mole, if you want to call it a mole. Because I think all these players know each other fairly well. Like, I'm sure CJ McCollum can call up Pascal Siakam or whoever on the Raptors if he really wanted to. I feel like there's a relationship sort of across the board with a lot of NBA players. But everyone knows something's going on, but no one knows exactly what it is. And if we're talking about anything that's important down the stretch of the season or down the stretch towards the trade deadline, it's identifying the root of the issue. What is... When there's a stench in the house, where is it coming from? What garbage needs to be replaced? Like, where is the stench coming from? What's the issue? What is the root cause of the problem? Is there one player who's really unhappy? Is there one player who makes people feel uncomfortable? Is the coach making the team feel uncomfortable? What is it that's the problem? We still don't know. We've been speculating for months or at least weeks. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about it for a long time. Like, what is the problem? We know there's some unhappiness. We know there's something wrong. We can see it on the court. We can see it and hear it when they open their mouths, but we don't actually know exactly what it is. And I feel like CJ McCollum probably does know. I'm sure a lot of people around the league know.
I don't think he would come out there and say something of that sort unless you know. Like, what does he have to gain?
Well, I guess clicks.
Oh, really? I don't think he's.
Well, why did you do that? Why did you do a podcast if he doesn't want clicks?
I just think there's probably a lot of truth and validity to this. If I was to speculate that a player with his connections would make a statement like that, knowing, yeah, sure, maybe knowing that it would catch fire, but like, you got to be held accountable for that type of comment as well. Like, I'm sure that he's going to be grilled, or he's going to be the subject of a lot of, like, there's a lot of articles written about this. Like, you don't make a statement like that.
Well, if he's telling the truth, it's not an issue.
Well, I think that he raised the, some players are unhappy is the first time I've heard more of a concrete confirmation of that. Like, we've speculated, we've had lots of people on here that cover the team. Oh, I don't know. The vibes seem off, but a player that knows them well to say that people are unhappy is a.
I mean, I think it confirms what we thought all along.
Right, but
no?
Nobody had really confirmed that. Now right. We have a player,
and we're still half confirming it, right?
No, I'm going to trust that if he says that the players are unhappy,
but half confirming it in that we don't have all the information.
Right. Okay. So let's say that they're going to move someone. Guaranteed. That doesn't
Not
surprise
even.
Me.
Maybe they all, like, this is all speculative, but maybe they all hate Nick Nurse.
Sure.
It's possible. Maybe they all resent Fred for being, you know, from not approaching the season with a team first mentality and more thinking about, hey, where's my contract going? How does my role best suit me? Mm. Like, there are a lot of things that could be it, right?
I think we should get CJ McCollum on the show.
Again, he's not going to say because of tampering or whatever.
That was funny.
I mean, I don't know.
Because of tampering, I'm going to give you 80% of the story, and I'm going to keep the good 20% close to the heart.
I can't say names because I guess the Pelicans could be trying to court one of these players, I guess, is how they could spin it.
So imagine that happens. Someone on the Raptors ends up going to the Pelicans, and this was the way that CJ McCollum gave us
that. Gary Trent Jr. goes to the Pelicans. I don't know. It's just, we have to, they know. It doesn't, Masai Ujiri doesn't have to figure out what's wrong. They know what's wrong. And they got to see if they can rectify it, or they have to. Well, either way, they got to see if they can rectify it. But do they try to massage relationships that might be a little bit broken or a little bit fractured? Or do they move on and do the best thing for the team? That's all that really matters this season and over the next month, is uncovering or addressing the issue at hand. The issue that no one really knows what it is, or at least no one's openly talking about it, but they know exists because everyone's talking about it without actually talking about it. They have to figure out and address what this is and then move forward. Because if there is something, like, you, the most important thing beyond that is Scottie Barnes. And if Scottie Barnes it's never going to work with this player or whatever. It's never going to gel. It's never going to mesh. You're never going to be able to grow. Then they have to just cut bait and figure out exactly what that is and move forward with what they have.
Maybe the most promising stretch then, about if you're watching these games with a question mark about which direction are we going, what are we gaining, is that Scottie Barnes has looked like he's coming back into the Scottie Barnes that we want and expect. And that's the most important part, really, like, that I can circle right now with this Raptor season. Like, his continued progress and growth as a member of this team was a huge storyline coming into his season two, and something that did not look like he was on the right path for the first half of the season. Now we're on a progression, which, you know, cross your fingers, isn't just a blip. That's a really good sign. I mean, I don't think I obviously don't think that that's a potential that he's the player that CJ McCollum's talking about. But I do think that it could be encouraging for Raptors fans to hear this report.
So it is possible, but I doubt it.
No, I don't think it's possible. They had the opportunity to do that in the postseason with one of the biggest names in the NBA, did they not?
Oh, the offseason.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Anyway, I don't think
it also could be a this season issue.
Right. I don't think that's what he's talking about.
Let's say he's just rubbing everyone the wrong way. I don't know. Like, it's, whatever it is, I don't agree with it either. And if he is, you choose him over everybody else, don't you? Because
yes.
He's the future of this team. And he's shown recently that he's still that guy.
That's the most encouraging part right
and
now for me.
I agree. And I'm just bringing that in because it's possible. But I
feel like it's a 3% chance.
Okay.
Maybe 5.
Okay. Whatever
anyway,
it is. Whatever it is, I'm just saying we don't know what the issue is. And Scotty has been like his whole season has been kind of controversial in that, like, okay, what's wrong with him? What's wrong with Scotty? Something we asked every week for the last 3 months or 2 months or whatever it is. Like, we've asked that. What's wrong with Scotty? And when he just plays, and now there's no excuse for it because he's stacked these really good performances together. He can be the best player on the floor at times and in moments and for prolonged stretches. So there's no excuse for him to play bad anymore. Just play Scotty. Just play. Just lose everything else and just be Scotty Barnes. And that is enough. And there's no excuse for him to play bad anymore because we know he can do it. You know, we can do it against really good competition. We know he can adapt to situations. We know he's still Scotty Barnes. Mm-hmm. And if we're wanting to see anything on the court, it's just him continuing to be himself.
And you need to be sure that this young guy can lead a team, has had the growth on and off the court, because that might be your next step, is this guy being the leader of this team. God forbid we lose Pascal Siakam. I don't know if they go for a major organizational change. He's the guy that needs to step in and fill that role, and he's 21 years old. So that's why this part of the season for me is all about seeing Scotty Barnes' progression, and that's
the
most promising thing.
He's the most important player on the roster.
And maybe hearing what CJ McCollum says might feel like a positive thing for Raptors fans hearing that. Okay, they're going to move someone. They're going to make some headlines here. They're going to do something. Like, I don't know how much you take stock of what he's saying as valid, but I don't know. It kind of confirmed what we had been thinking, what we've been feeling, and I'm not surprised to hear it.
Yeah, I don't think it came as a surprise to anyone because we've all felt it, and now it's just time to address it. And you don't have to do it immediately just because CJ McCollum said it, but the Raptors have to address this issue before the deadline, I think, or you risk the rest of the season being like kind of toxic and kind of overshadowing everything else, and you don't want to overshadow what is the growth or diminish the potential growth of Scotty Barnes.
Anyway, all eyes on what management decides to do. Like, they have a huge opportunity to address some issues that they have created on this team with this roster, with this depth. And, I mean, time's ticking. Yeah, it's not next week, but there's a lot of value in being the first people to make a move. So we'll keep waiting. All right. Cowboys. All right, Justin. That might have been the worst football game I've seen of Brady's career.
We couldn't go 6-for-6, by the way, on the weekend. Like, no. We had 5 great games. Monday nighter, not fun. Easy excuse to go to bed early, at least. Not good, though. And yet, Tom Brady's going to be back next year. Tom Brady's going to play quarterback in the NFL at 46 years old next year after a brutal, awful, dreadful season and a playoff appearance that he didn't earn, wasn't earned on merit. The team shouldn't have been there, wasn't good enough ever. We convinced ourselves otherwise, but they were never, aside from 1 week against the Carolina Panthers, even a reasonably functioning football team.
They did not look like a legitimate playoff contender, and they were exposed last night by Dak Prescott and the Cowboys on home field, and Tom Brady, who we thought the magic could be there. He's playoff Tom Brady. We expected a completely different performance. Laid an egg, and it was maybe the worst Tom Brady performance we've seen, and I don't think that he returns with the Buccaneers after that game. And we have obviously him on the podium afterwards. He's going to keep the questions and the answers pending for everybody. I would not be surprised if he retires during Super Bowl week, then comes back again, keeps his name in the limelight. Like, the guy has the script to be the conversation.
Thankfully he doesn't have to go that route. He is a free agent,
right?
So he doesn't have to play these games. He doesn't have to try and
wiggle
his way out.
He could still play these games, Justin.
He doesn't have to, though.
He's going to.
No, I don't think so.
He's going to shop around, and we're going to hear.
Oh, he's going to shop around.
Yeah, so that's going to be the games. He's going to be spotted in San Francisco. He's going to be spotted in Miami.
Which is fine. I mean, you're allowed to do that.
Yeah, but that's why I'm saying playing games, keeping his name in the mind.
I just don't think he's going to retire.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him, Justin.
I don't think we're going to see that.
Okay, let's play what he said on the podium postgame.
We're very grateful for everyone's support, and hopefully I love this organization. It's a great place to be, and thank you everybody for welcoming me, all you regulars, and just very grateful for the respect, and I hope I gave the same thing back to you guys, so thank you very much.
bye-bye.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like he'll be back.
If I said that on a Friday, leaving this office, you'd think I would not be back Monday.
We'd be preparing for someone else to be here in that seat on Monday.
There was just, I know he's a respectful guy and he wants to, you know, talk to the media and show appreciation, but no part of me felt like that was a, we'll see you soon. We'll be back, you know, this summer.
I think he was genuinely saying thanks to both the organization and the people that he interacted with while being a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But again, why would he be back? I mean, this team is not good enough anymore. This team is not even close.
They weren't good all season long.
Not only was the offense brutal, they couldn't stop Dak Prescott and the Cowboys. Like, they had nothing to offer.
And credit to them. They played a great game.
No resistance. Yeah, I don't want to take anything away from the Cowboys. They were awesome. And I was doubtful or skeptical that they could be that awesome, but they were. But this Bucs team is not good enough. Tom Brady wanted a different challenge at this time last year, retired in order to try to achieve that, did not get it. There was like the boat thing and the meetings and the tampering. Forget CJ McCollum. Brady was full on tampering with the Miami Dolphins last year. We just don't know exactly what he wants in terms of his next chapter, but we do know he's free of the shackles, at least from a professional standpoint, that he was dealing with last year. He had to be a Buck. He was under contract, no longer under contract, free agent. He can do what he wishes. And I believe Tom Brady is going to find a place to play football at 46 years old. And I don't think it's going to yield anything or bear any fruit because he's 46 years old and not that good anymore, but he's going to have a football team to play for next year. We just don't know where.
But at what point is it time? He's a victim.
It's time now.
Like, I know.
It's. But if you want to play, you want to play. Like, I'm not going to.
He's a victim.
I'm not going to fault anyone for wanting to be a professional athlete still. But if you're a team that's serious, I just, you're not going to accomplish anything with Tom Brady. At least I don't think. Like, the New York Jets are really, really good. They have one big problem.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterback. Could the New York Jets put Tom Brady in and be a playoff team? I think they could. I think they could be pretty good. But I think you're going to hit your ceiling eventually. You're not going to get through the top 3-4 in the AFC. You might go to the playoffs, but that's about it. Like, that's, he can be a game manager at this point, but he's not Tom Brady anymore.
He needs to join a roster where he is not relied on to be the Tom Brady that has willed his team to success. And he is a victim of his own success because we expect him, like last night, to go in and be out of this world Tom Brady. That team did not have the weapons. Well, first of all, him and Mike Evans look like they're on different planets. Like, he couldn't connect with anyone. It was sloppy. It seems so
Cowboys D-line was discombobulated. Carving up the O-line,
for sure.
Though.
But nonetheless, the performance wasn't inspiring. But yes, the roster wasn't the type of roster that, you know, gives you the vote of confidence all season long. They weren't great. Last night it showed that, okay, you're kind of fraudulent to get to this point. But yeah, if he joins a roster where he doesn't have to be the best player on the team, maybe that's the cushion he wants. But I don't know. I feel like Tom Brady's going to seek more, like, spotlight. Like, I don't think he wants to join a team that isn't great. Once again, like, he tried that. It didn't work.
Yeah, I guess the Raiders are an option, but I don't think they're good enough. Here's how to best contextualize it. 49ers are picking Brock Purdy over Tom Brady all day, every day.
Who wouldn't be?
Like, this guy has only, played 7-8 games?
Brock Purdy's the new Tom Brady.
He's performed very, very well in those games, but he's an unproven asset mostly. But why would the San Francisco 49ers risk everything?
They would be absolutely out of their minds to do that.
They would be out of their minds.
Brock Purdy's played one playoff game. Let me just say that, though. Like, he's played one playoff game.
But that's the proper context. A Super Bowl-ready team would be out of their minds to bring Tom Brady in. That's where he's at in his career. Before, 5, 6, 7 years ago, Tom Brady could make you a Super Bowl team.
Mm-hmm.
He won multiple Super Bowls.
He's not him anymore.
With his heroics alone. He's not that guy anymore. But if he wants to play football, whatever, go play football.
God, I've never felt worse for a player in the NFL than that Cowboys kicker last night. Talk about the yips.
Bad.
It was
that was
it
me.
Was shocking.
That's my
this
driver.
Is you. This is you
it's
gambling as of late.
We hit a waking rake last night.
Okay, with an asterisk. So unfortunately, well, there's some books that anyway,
explain that.
I'm excited for you. Okay,
you're excited for
me. I don't know how. At one point, I looked down. Tom Brady had hit over passing yards. I thought, has he even passed the ball once this game? I don't know. It just snuck up on me. So hit that one. Hit our Mike Evans prop. And I don't know, depends on the books. Like some people get, the book I bet with didn't give me this, but you had over Devils team
mine
totals.
Mine was listed as a loss, but I woke up this
morning.
So
sometimes they switch it. But your Devils team total was over 3.5 and they won in a shootout with 4 goals. But majority of books say it's a regulation or OT.
Majority?
Yes.
Okay.
Majority of books would say that that goal doesn't count.
You can't give me a little credit on this.
I'm saying you found a way in some books to win a week. I'm proud of you.
I hope people were on the right book.
The specific book that you bet with allowed it. But I'm saying a majority of the books wouldn't. And I'm on the wouldn't side. And I'm very happy that you were able to find
success. Maybe they'll change it for you.
Maybe they will. But technically, if you read what does a goal mean, a shootout goal
But when you're betting over unders and it's 6.5 and it's 3-3 goes to a shootout, you win.
Okay, I understand. But some books are not like that, Justin. I'm just saying. I'm sure we're going to get some texts in that people are like, oh, I didn't win.
I'll keep it to the totals because that's a little bit of the fine print I don't want to have to deal with.
So I'm not diminishing your win. I'm just explaining the situation that...
Our win.
I'm not diminishing it. I'm proud of you. That's a huge step forward for the team.
Thank you.
But I think there'll be some people that say,
I hope some people did actually.
Yeah, we need that.
Hit. But we'll see.
But that guy could not hit. If you had a missed field goal prop, you smash the over. I felt really bad.
We got really distracted there, Brett Maher. Yeah.
Yeah.
really, almost tough to watch.
It was tough to watch.
But I don't even, like, it's easy to say his, mechanics are way off, but it looked like he was, like, grazing the very bottom tip of the ball
every time
he was kicking
it. I don't know anything about kicking
the
ball,
either, but I'm like, you watch and you're like, yeah, of course that didn't go through the uprights. It was awful. Like, he didn't put his foot through it.
He put his foot under it. He was Kikuchi last night.
It was like he was trying to flop shot, like, in golf where you're just, like, right behind the ball, barely hitting it.
I was wondering if they would put him back out. And at one point, they didn't put the field goal unit out and then it ended up converting for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. But he got one more field goal attempt and he hit it. But to get out there for another opportunity... But actually to hit the field goal, I was like, okay, that's good. Because this guy, you're going to need him next week.
I don't know. I think you lost.
So that's the thing. Is he on waivers today? Is this guy a part of the Cowboys? I don't think so.
I feel like the most heartbreaking thing about last night is you're watching someone lose their job in the moment.
And everybody knew it.
And like, it's not because like he's not trying. It's not like he's like actively trying to throw away his professional career, but you're watching that happen in real time.
It was tough to watch.
It was brutal.
Like a train wreck.
I don't even know how that happens, though.
But good on him for ending that game with one successful kick.
I think either of us had 4 opportunities to hit an extra point. We hit one of those.
No chance, Justin.
Honestly. Yeah.
I would love to try it one day. Maybe that's our next show bet. You got to go out there and kick field goals.
I'm almost positive each one of us would hit 1 of 4.
All right, well, I'm sure we'll get an opportunity if you wheel it into fruition. Anyway, Cowboys opening as, 2.5, 3.5, 4.5 point dogs? We looked it up minutes ago.
It's a big difference between 2.5, 3.5, 4.5.
3.5, you saw, I saw 4.
I think there's a 4. 3.5 or 4 out there. So
against the Niners.
49ers, 3.5 to 4 point favorites over the Cowboys.
I mean, the Cowboys looked good last night, so... We'll break it all down. We've 49ers
got, will look really good for a long time.
Of course. We got Ty Dunn at 7. We've got Luke Fox at 7:30 and Stan Van Gundy joining us at 8. But we're going to definitely talk about the following topic with Luke Fox because talk about tough breaks. Nick Robertson.
This hurt your heart, eh?
It's a tough one. Nick Robertson the Leafs announced that he recently underwent season-ending shoulder surgery and will be out for approximately 6 weeks. We remember he suffered that injury on the 8th of December against the Kings. They originally tried to rehab the injury, obviously wasn't successful. Now he's going to have to go surgery route. He's had some significant hurdles in his young career since being, you know, all-star in the OHL, someone that the Leafs prospects and Leafs fan base was really fired up against. He had a knee injury, he had a fracture of his fibula. He's gone through it, and now... He's sidelined.
Watching his brother grow into a superstar.
That's tough as well. He's sidelined for the rest of the year. And I guess, honestly, the question now arises, like, what's his future if there is one with this organization? It's tough. It's like, and I saw this yesterday, so kudos to the people that made this connection first. It's Nate Pearson territory. We don't know what we're getting from this guy. It is just a bonus if he plays for this team. Like,
Pretty
tell
harsh.
Me I'm wrong, though.
Yeah, I guess in that way, it's a bonus if he plays for the team, because I just feel like you can't ever count on that at this point. And it's not because he's injury prone or whatever. It's just for whatever reason, time and time again, there is a reason why it's not working out. And I think we're trending dangerously close to busted prospect territory, at least for this organization. Perhaps he moves on and he, you know, flourishes somewhere else. But it feels like, you know, we're almost reaching the end of the line here for reasons that are not, you know, not within anyone else's control. Just like happenstance and unfortunate set of circumstances that this guy continues to run into. It just seems like it's not working for whatever reason.
On December 9th, I said that might be the last game we ever see Nick Robertson wearing a Leafs jersey, and there was some pushback, but I don't know. It's like that's aging well at this point. It has nothing to do with the kid. It has to do with just the fit right now, and we're holding on to a guy that we don't know anything about in terms of what's his future, where's his impact. He had some opportunities at the beginning of the year also to make an impact, and he didn't come out swinging.
He's got one more year at entry level, so he'll be back at training camp with the Maple Leafs next year with another kick in the can.
You've got Matthew Nyes highlight real goals every week in the NCAA, is surely going to get an opportunity in that top six when it's time.
Yeah, at a certain point, you do get lapped. You get lapped by those who are coming from behind you. And it's not necessarily, you know, an embarrassment of riches for the Maple Leafs in terms of prospects and guys pushing to get into the lineup. Most of the people that do come up are kind of those utility gritty guys like Holmberg and Bobby McMahon. But at a certain point, you're going to get overrun by those who are coming behind you.
Yeah, I mean, then it's tough to see. Like, you hope for the best for this kid. Maybe it's just a change of scenery when he's back healthy and gets a different opportunity with a different team where it's easier to crack the lineup to work his way. He just needs NHL opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that was a question we had at the beginning of the season. Like, why isn't he in the lineup? Like, give this guy the reps. And now, obviously, 6 months from now, we'll see where he fits and if he fits with this roster.
And the injuries are an issue. But him being not exactly the pinnacle of versatility is the main issue for him as an NHL player. Like, he's got to find a place where he can have a little bit more wiggle room, a little bit more margin for error. If he lands with a team that is rebuilding, a team that's looking to the future, maybe he grows into the NHL player he's supposed to become. But with the Maple Leafs, it's difficult because there's really only one spot for him to fit, and they can't afford to have someone who's not productive in that spot now and moving forward.
So we know the situation for him. We'll talk about it in 6 months. All right, Leafs back in action tonight after their hard-fought loss against Boston on Saturday. One of the games that meant something finally. Tonight they play the Florida Panthers, who have not been as exciting or as successful as maybe predicted after winning the President's Trophy.
Probably the most disappointing team this year.
Yep. It has been a bit confusing for these guys. The Florida Panthers are on a back-to-back coming into tonight. They just beat the Sabres 4-1. And, I mean, I just think it's a great... I think it's a good spot for the Leafs tonight. Like, this team, I think, should win. I think regulation win tonight for my wake and rake. Just throwing it out there. You can send yours in to 590-590.
All
I just
right.
think the Leafs...
Throwing down the gauntlet early.
The Leafs had a really hard-fought game on Saturday. They played against one of, if not, the best team in the NHL right now. And they measured up quite great. They came out short. They're going to want to get things going back in the right direction. They're really good on home ice. It's Tuesday. They had a day or two off. I just think it's a really good spot for the Leafs to continue growing. But there is a weird illness going around the team. People are a little sick.
Didn't know that.
A note. Yeah. I think it's Holmberg and Sandin right now having a little.
Oh, McMahon was out too, right?
Yeah. And a little flu bug going on. Not sure exactly what the lineups are going to look like, but I think the defense pairings might be a little wonky tonight.
You think there's going to be a change?
Well, it looks like Jordy Benn was skating alongside Connor Timmins on the Leafs' third blue line pairing.
Okay.
Yeah. Dryden Hunt skated on the fourth line with Holmberg out. Sandin's sideline right now looks like Lilgren.
Oh, Sandin's out, right?
Yeah, Lilgren was with Morgan Riley. Just, I think it's going to be maybe.
Well, I like the Riley-Lilgren pairing. The
More brief, than Sandin?
The brief time it existed. Well, you got to find someone to play with Morgan Riley.
And
yeah,
I think that's
the issue now. And I think that might be the issue in the months leading up to the trade deadline, because clearly they haven't found a comfortable spot for Riley at the moment. We can break this down a little bit more with Luke, and we can talk about it tomorrow. But I think one of the priorities here, or if we're talking about issues that need to be identified and rectified, it's making sure that the Maple Leafs' number one defenseman is in a spot where he can perform and act like a number one defenseman.
We will talk a lot of Morgan Riley, I think, with Luke Fox. I don't think it's time to sound the alarm, but we do have Sheldon Keefe before we take a break, just talking about Riley's struggles since returning.
Yeah, I think he's still trying to find his game, you know. Whether it's the physical part of it, getting back in and the knee being strong and all of that. I think he's passed all those tests and feels good with that, but getting back into rhythm of his play hasn't quite been there on both sides of the puck. So, you know, we want to continue to work with him with that and be patient, and, you know, at the same time.
See what Luke thinks about how long we can be patient for, and if, I mean, the major concern is if he's not able to be elevating himself and he has to rely on a D partner, is that now something that we're circling for a trade deadline move? Luke Fox is at 7:30 with us after we speak with Ty Dunn about the end of Super Wild Card Weekend and what looks next for these teams and maybe Tom Brady's future. But we're going to take a break and do the A-list on the other side. Justin and Ailish on the Fan Morning Show.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now, it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
The bing bong feels a little better this morning after you beat the Knicks. Eh? Suck it. All right.
All right.
Keep an eye out for the next Vladdy Guerrero Jr.'s brother. So Pablo.
The next Vladdy Guerrero Jr.'s brother.
Pablo Guerrero, 16-year-old brother.
Is that two brothers removed from relevancy? Or just the brother?
Well, he's a 16-year-old brother of Vladdy, just signed by the Texas Rangers as an international free agent out of the Dominican Republic.
Didn't want to come to the barrio?
Yeah, that's why I'm rattled about this. Why didn't you come to Toronto? But yeah, we're keeping the pipeline going.
Okay.
Yeah. They've got the brother of, Acuña Jr. as well. In their minor league system, Pablo currently plays third base and outfield, but projects as a first baseman. So maybe that's why he didn't want to join and be in the shadows of his brother.
Sounds a whole lot like Vlad.
He sure does.
Is he a big boy like Vlad?
I don't have his height and weight available at this moment. But
is it all about dingers?
Appearance-wise, he has a similar makeup.
Yeah, it's probably pretty understandable.
He's also 17,
if not predictable.
Anywho, I'm just sad that he didn't want to come up to six, but
it's okay.
It's lots of time.
We got 17. We have our Guerrero.
All right, tell me if this is a red flag or a faux pas. Marlon Humphrey, who we know just lost the Ravens playoff over the Bengals in a dramatic fashion. He was really upset with his sister because his sister Brianna tweeted the following. Wow, Sam Hubbard kind of fine. After he has the play of the game, a fumble return for 98 yards to score.
Yeah, it's too soon.
She tweets, wow, Sam Hubbard kind of fine. And Marlon Humphrey quote tweets, see, this is why we lost right there. It'd be your own flesh and blood.
that's pretty funny.
Is that too soon for a sister?
That's too soon. That's too soon.
Is there ever a non-too soon, like to tweet about the guy that just ruined your brother's playoff performance?
I think if you faked noticing Sam Hubbard's good looks in divisional round a week later, you could be like, that's, you know, you could get away with it then.
It's a tough time to say so.
It is a bit of a tough time to say so.
Anyway, she goes, I take it back, bro. I'm sorry, but damage was done, so.
You've stated your opinion. It's out there.
Yeah, it's
tough. It lives forever.
And people got screenshots. All right, last one. Talk about someone that I could not be further from. An individual in Australia ran a marathon every day for 150 days in a row. 150 days in a row. 3,900 miles. After setting off from the tip of Australia 5 months, she ended up at the southern edge of the country, 32-year-old Marie Bartlett.
Mm-hmm.
finished her journey every day for 150 days, sets a world record for the most daily consecutive marathons by a woman while raising awareness and money for a wilderness society. Holy crap. Well,
I mean, that's cool. I like that it's not like she's just not like leaving her house and doing a marathon. She's going somewhere, which is kind of fun.
She missed out on qualifying for the Tokyo Olympics as well. So I think maybe there's a little bit of a, I need to do this for me. Need to do this.
Okay. Yeah. I can see that.
Running. She's also raising awareness for extinction.
When you said you couldn't be farther away, I thought you were just talking proximity, but.
But technically, you know, that as well.
Maybe running ability and endurance as well.
150 days of marathons. Like, think about her body, her feet, her muscle soreness. Like, I ran for one day and then 2 weeks later, I can still feel it. Right?
Yeah, I'm with you.
And I don't know where she was sleeping, like if she had a trailer. Like, that's a lot of coordination.
It's also a lot of Australia you're seeing. Like,
well,
in terms, like,
probably it's, beautiful.
But also, like, dangerous a
little
bit.
There's some places you don't want to run through.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's, like, a perfectly lined route of marathon
straight
after marathon
south
for 100 plus days or whatever it was. She's probably
150 days.
She's probably dealing with some things.
I want to know, like, what she saw. Like, she ran through the coastline, rainforest, dirt roads, highways, torrential rain, sometimes heat over 35 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
Like, she saw this all.
Not exactly.
Beautiful way to see the
easy
country, but I would also rather take.
Not stepping on a treadmill.
A car.
Yeah, I'd rather see a car too.
Good for her, though. I will never be anywhere in comparison
to her.
There
are more efficient ways to see Australia.
I'd like to go there one day, though.
I would too.
Have you ever been?
I have not.
Yeah. It's a goal. It's a dream. Maybe we can go run one marathon there. How about a 5K?
I tried a half marathon once and I walked the last 5K. So.
Oh, that's tough.
Yeah.
I could start with a 5K.
I think you could do 5K. A little adrenaline, no problem.
I did run 8K yesterday.
Oh, there you go. That's the problem, then.
But I walked some of it. So.
8K, you could build yourself up to a half
marathon
in no time.
Yeah, the only thing is I don't know the proper trail. Like, some of my friends run marathons, but they know, like, you got to do 3, and then you got to do 5, and then you got to take a rest day, and then you got to do 6. Like, there's a whole strategy to getting ready to run a marathon, and I couldn't even be
I thought I was appropriately preparing myself, and I thought I ran half marathons, like, in the lead-up, but I don't think I ever. I don't think I calculated it right.
You didn't use, like, your watch to.
It was. I didn't have an app.
You just went out and you just ran a straight line.
Apple iWatches. iWatch? What is it called?
Apple Watch.
Apple Watch. They didn't exist when I did that.
Well, you have another opportunity now.
I don't think I'll ever be doing
that. You ran
that
the
again.
Beep test a couple months ago. You're ready.
That was my final athletic act.
Okay. We got Ty Dunn on the other side of the break, NFL writer, founder of Go Long TD. We're going to talk about wrapping up that Super Wild Card weekend. Do you feel like it still needs to exist or not after last night? Maybe you're feeling less confident.
It would have been
about
a better take after last night's game.
It would have been. All right,
although,
that's next.
Division winner.
That's next.